Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three. No, it's good.
They got it.
Kansas Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
It's Thursday night, and you know what that means. It's time for the Red Zone, WZND's very own sports talk show. I'm Leo Stauderher, your sports director here at WZND, and I'm joined by my cast of characters of Bettendorf, Iowa's very own Joey Dwyer, and the man that needs no intro, our producer, Joe Kennedy.
I appreciate the shout-out to Bettendorf. Everybody says Quad Cities, but I really do appreciate the shout-out to B-Town over there.
That's just the fine attention to detail I'm trying to bring, Joe.
That is the quality that we pay attention to on this show.
But guys, they didn't come here. Nobody's listening to hear us talk about our hometowns or the detail we pay attention about each other as much as we care, because I care about you guys very much. But
I appreciate
we care
that.
About
Thank you.
The
Thank
Redbird
you so much.
Sports.
Yeah, we
Redbird
do.
Sports is what we're here for. And we had some Redbird sports this weekend, guys. Let's not sugarcoat it.
We
Redbird
did.
Basketball. Oh, man. Oh,
tough weekend.
It was a tough weekend.
They played basketball games.
They did play.
And that's a positive I got to say about
it. So let's start by setting the scene here. They were facing Drake, who, if you're not paying attention to college basketball this year, is one of the top teams in the country, has not lost a game. I believe they're currently ranked 25. So
yeah.
Big test for the Birds. Birds in a rebuilding year. And on Sunday, I thought they did a very good job of it by losing in overtime 78-76. This was a winnable game. They had their chances, came up a little short at the end. We'll get into that in a minute. But then Monday, it was the same team we've seen too much this season. By not building off that momentum from the day before, they got beat, and they got beat bad, losing 95-60. Where do we go following this weekend's performance for Redbird basketball?
I think that a lot of good things can be taken out of the weekend, especially when you look at that game that went into overtime. Like Antonio Reeves is a sophomore. We've been talking about him all year. He put up 27, DJ Horn with 14, which is kind of bizarre when you think about the way that the Redbirds have been playing this season, only because we usually see a lot of depth scoring, and we see guys who will come out, highest score will be like DJ Horn with 17, but then Dusan Mihorčić and Antonio Reeves and Howard Fleming, they'll all have over 10, and the Derek Boyd with like 9. So it was an interesting way that the Birds played, and I appreciate that they changed it up. And giving the ball, playing more through Antonio Reeves and DJ Horn. However, I just don't think that's sustainable because I love Antonio Reeves, and I think give him a year or two, he's going to be a stud in the Missouri Valley.
Right.
But I don't think right now he can handle that workload on a consistent basis.
Definitely. The consistency has been the biggest problem with Reeves so far. Is you see he's got the size and he's got all the skill that is there, but it just stringing that together over a course of 3 or 4 games has been a problem for him because he's so young and so raw. But once he hones those skills, I think it could be more sustainable.
And I think
Joe, sorry to cut you off.
He finally got a chance, though, too, this time, because Josiah Strong's been injured, and they were missing that depth against Drake in both of the games. But Antonio Reeves drops 20 points in back-to-back games. But with Josiah Strong out, it's just they're missing some depth at the guard position, and I think that's why we saw a lot of DJ Horn and Antonio Reeves especially. And they miss, like, a physical presence, too, as well, when Josiah Strong is out, especially on defense, and especially against Drake in that Sunday game.
So just what confuses me about the Drake series was that they could play so well on Sunday and hang in there with the best team in the Valley, a nationally ranked team, but then just get so outclassed on Monday. Where does that come down to? Is it because the effort they expended on Sunday just wasn't, they weren't able to do that for 2 nights in a row, or is Drake just that much better?
I think it was the shooting, because I think on Sunday they were just shooting the ball really well, and then the beginning of the game the next day, they weren't shooting the ball well to start off the game. And Once the Redbirds are down, it's very hard to shoot back into a game, even though they are one of the best three-point shooting teams, the third best in the league. But once you get into deficits, especially against Drake, you can't come back from that just by shooting the ball.
I think a lot of the lack of consistency comes from the youth on this team, just watching them play, because, like, we called the Bradley game, and that was easily the best Redbirds basketball I've watched in 2 years. They were full of energy, full of life. They were shooting the lights out of the building. And that was a lot of what we saw in that Sunday game against Drake, where they were shooting like crazy. They were such high energy because they were going against this team who is so good. Now they're nationally ranked. But again, it's just that consistency and bringing your best every game is something that I think the team struggles with a lot. And I just think that comes from youth and inexperience, which is a good and bad problem to have, because good, everybody on this team is going to get more experience. The bad is you're going to have to wait.
And you see the growing pains too as well, but you see that they're making an effort to expand in how they play and on the court, and especially off the court too as well. A thing I think they're missing is like a true wing player, true number three. It seems like they're more playing like a guard position, like Dedrick Boyd, Antonio Reeves, and DJ Horn. They're kind of playing a three-guard ball game, and I think that's just something they're really missing out, especially in this conference where you see a bunch of high-quality small forwards.
And you see Dan Moeller trying to use Antonio Reeves as that small forward, because Antonio Reeves does have the shot from beyond the arc, but they also use him when he's driving down into that lane, and they're trying to make him a physical presence. He doesn't quite have the stature for it.
He's gotten right when we did the Bradley game, Joe, I feel like that's when he really started to become like physical too.
Exactly.
Like, four games.
He turned that corner, and I think that he can be that three guard that you're talking about. But again, that's just going to come with time and more experience playing in the Valley.
So looking forward for the Redbirds this weekend, they play Missouri State, who is a good team in the Valley, but not, you know, as good as Drake.
Mm-hmm.
So this could be a game where maybe the measuring stick, you could pull that out and see where they shake up against Missouri State. If you're Coach Dan Moeller, what's one change you're making heading into this weekend's games?
I think they need to work the high-low ball more with DJ Horn down to either Mohorcic or Abdu Jai, or even Antonio Reeves with DJ Horn. But they've done well in those games where they're working the ball down low to Dusan Mohorcic and kind of setting up the screens up to the top of the key or the top of the perimeter, and just really making the off-ball movements too, and just trying to get the high-low ball. I think that will really work out well for the Redbirds, and it worked out well against Bradley, who has one of the best interior defenses in the Valley too.
Joe, that's exactly what I was going to say. I think the Birds got to get the big men more involved. Soren Serbian. In that series against Drake, Dusan Mohorcic was a non-factor. Abdu Jai was not really there either. Arona Sissoko kind of showed up in that second game, but to no avail because they got blown out by 35. But I think that is important because while the Redbirds do have these shooters who can absolutely heat it up from beyond the arc, that's not an all-the-time consistent thing. They're not shooting 45% from back there. So having an offense that can run through the big men as well, when those shooters aren't hot, you can still get points every possession by working it down low.
And one thing real quick, I just got to talk about the free throw shooting, because it's 61%, and Mohorcic did have a chance to take the lead with under 10 seconds, I believe, against Drake in that game, which could have won the game for the Redbirds. They're shooting free throw percentage that is like high school numbers, and that's really not good.
Yeah, that free throw opportunity was brutal, but I mean, I couldn't make them. So who am I to cast stones, you know? But
yeah.
Okay. But Coach Joe, you both did bring up the big man presence that hasn't been there. Does that fall on the Redbirds' recruiting strategy, possibly? Because it feels like that they're going for these high-talent guys like Reeves or Horn, but maybe you see Loyola and Drake, they're recruiting these large guys that then develop over the course of 4 years.
I don't think it's a recruiting issue because the big guys are there, right? Like, you have Mohorcic and you have Abdu Jai and even Arona Sissoko, and then think about Keith Fisher, who opted out.
That's right, yeah.
Exactly,
and
Alex
Kotov. Yeah.
Like, they have the big guys. They just have to play to their strong suits and work the offense through the big guys.
So it's more
the system, I would say.
They have the pieces, but they're playing a system that doesn't cater to their skill sets, is what you're saying.
Exactly, and especially when you're missing Josiah Strong, like, that's when you need to look at those guys the most, because you're missing one of those perimeter threats.
And they do a good job in the paint, too. They're second in the Valley in blocks per game with about four almost in every single game. So you're seeing that they do have, especially the defensive presence, they do very well, especially in their 2-3 zone. I've seen a lot in the past couple of games. They've been going into that. And that's really limited teams from shooting really inside the paint and just forcing teams to shoot outside the perimeter.
And so I thank both of you for your coaching analysis. Maybe the Redbirds were listening and can try to change things. This weekend, as I mentioned, they play Missouri State Saturday and Sunday. Both games are 2 o'clock. Both games you can catch on WZND. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about some other Redbird sports going on. So stick around for that. You're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
This is Steph Jankowicz from Redbird Volleyball, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
We're back with The Red Zone. We're the guys you just heard on that very well-produced promo doing exactly what we said we're going to be doing, talking some sports.
We absolutely did not.
It's always coming
sit around
it.
One microphone like and record that.
We didn't. And we did in one take, too. We didn't laugh at all through that.
Hey, now.
We should start a Patreon, and if you pay $5, you can get the bloopers from that promo.
Yes.
Because those are so funny.
Yeah.
Guys, let's get back to sports here. Come on. Let's get back to Redbird sports because we have a team that we've been very impressed with early on here, the Redbird volleyball team. They're starting their season off. They are playing their first ever spring season and are currently sitting at 3-3 after losing to Bradley on Monday. But they were a little shorthanded on Monday. But still, it's been a very solid season as they beat a ranked Cincinnati team, a ranked Marquette team, and also beat Bradley last week.
And the volleyball team has looked really solid, and obviously with Coach Johnson behind the helm now for a couple of years, we have been very, very good. But the moving narrative right now for the Redbirds is what is going to happen with the absence of Steph Jankowicz and Kaylee Martin. How long are they going to be out, and how is that going to affect the team? Because those are two of the most important players on this volleyball squad. So, and we don't have any information about why they didn't travel with the team to that Bradley game. So we're kind of left in limbo wondering what the future of this team's going to be, who looked very promising to start the season.
Yeah, I think they're going to really have to rely on Sarah Kushner and Caitlin Prodzinski. Kushner, sophomore, Prodzinski, a freshman, and they're both 2-3 in their kills. And I think they're just going to have to rely. There's a lot of veteran presence on this team, and there's also a lot of youth. And it's not great that those two players are out, but it's going to be a good experience, especially that it's kind of early on in the season. So I think Coach is going to be able to see what the younger players are able to do this year.
That's a good point you brought up, Joe, that this could almost be beneficial that it happened so early in the season. It's better it happening now than, you know,
yeah,
right before the conference
exactly.
tournament, because now you kind of get you're forced to dip deeper into your bench. And we even saw Sydney Holt missed a little bit of time with injury, too, so they had to learn how to play without her. So this is preparing the team to succeed even this year, but then next year, because Jankowicz, Holt, and Martin are all seniors, so they're not going to have them around next year. So this is preparing for what the future is, and we've seen they've been able to hang in with some very good teams without their best players. It really does bode well for what this team can do.
And also, they've got until April 1st until they have to play in that conference tournament. So they've got almost 2 months to really figure it out, and hopefully by then the team will all be healthy. Because they looked really promising, and the teams that they were beating before this conference play, like you said, Leo, ranked. Like Marquette was 20th at the time. Cincinnati has received votes, now has become ranked. And now they're going into a Valley stretch where they should be able to really run the table, Indiana State, Drake, Valparaiso, Loyola, Chicago, and they should really be able to pick up some steam if they are one of the premier teams in this conference.
And I think there's no reason they shouldn't be the top team in the Valley. They won it 2 years in a row, two tournament appearances back-to-back. And it felt like they drew a really tough seed last year when they had to face Wisconsin the first game after winning the Valley outright. So I think they were playing with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder where they don't want to be in that situation again this year. They want to put themselves in the spot where they're maybe the higher seed in the tournament and not having to face one of the top teams in the nation. So I think this team, this is the year to go all for it because this is one of Coach Johnson's first recruiting classes, are now seniors. They're experienced. They've played in the tournament back-to-back years. This could really be the start of a special season.
And I think it's a real testament to how well Coach Johnson has recruited and how her players have evolved over their course here at ISU. The fact that the Birds are working off of two of back-to-back Missouri Valley Conference championships has been a total turnaround to this volleyball program here. And they're one of the premier sports teams at ISU right now. Like, in the past 3 or 4 years, they're far and away the most successful.
Yeah, and, like, the crowd would be packed, I feel like. Like, sometimes volleyball games had more fans than either women's or men's basketball, even football sometimes, like against Illinois last year, too, especially. But their kryptonite is definitely the Bradley Braves. I feel like they've always had trouble with them this year, last year, even the past 4 years. I think before this year, or even this year, they lost at Bradley for about 3 years in a row.
And that's just a tough beat of it. But unfortunately, that's the end of the schedule with Bradley this year. As we mentioned, the volleyball team's record currently sits at 3-3. They're going to be facing Indiana State over the weekend. Mm-hmm. We're going to see what they can do there because really getting that Valley Conference schedule started.
And Bradley, yeah, Bradley's probably one of the top teams, too, in the Valley. And then you look at the other two losses, like you were saying, Cincinnati, who's receiving votes, and then also Marquette, who was ranked when ISU did beat them in five sets. So they've played a lot of tough competition, and they've won against both Marquette. They've won against every team they've played, and then they've lost every team they've played.
Very astute observation there, Joe Kennedy.
Yeah, so it's pretty even.
Glass is either half full or half empty.
Yeah, you decide.
Whatever you look.
You decide.
An even 500 winning percentage. And so we're going to take a quick break here after the recap in the volleyball season there. That completes our Redbird recap. But when we come back, there's a football game this weekend that we're going to talk about, give you some predictions about it. You're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
We're back with the Red Zone on WZND. As I mentioned, there is a championship football game being played this weekend. You all know what it's called. We don't have to tell you what it is. The NFL will be handing out a trophy this weekend. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will be playing in their own stadium, hosting the Kansas City Chiefs, the reigning champion Kansas City Chiefs, for what shapes up to be an interesting matchup. Joey, I know you don't think too highly of this. Want to tell everybody why?
Here's my whole thing, and I'm really trying to get myself psyched up for this game because this is like my roommate and I always watch football together,
right?
And this is the last game we're going to get to watch before he graduates, moves out to L.A. So ooh. I'm really trying to get hyped. We're getting some B-dubs. We're going to pop some Michelob Ultras. but I'm really not excited for the actual contents of the game because I think the Chiefs are going to run over the Bucks. I think the Bucks have no chance just because their defense is young in like too young in some spots, too old in other spots, and this Chiefs offense is everybody's in their prime, and it's just lethal.
Now, Joe, I know you don't disagree with him, and you were telling me a little bit about that you think this shakes up to a similar matchup that the Chiefs had to go against last year, which they almost lost.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the comparison of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to last year's San Francisco 49ers squad.
Yeah, so the 49ers last year had an insane front four, definitely the best last year in all the NFL. And then this year, it's arguably to say that the Bucs have the best front four. So last year, the 49ers had Armstrong, Ford, Buckner, and Bosa. This year, the Bucs got Jason Pierre-Paul, Shaq Barrett, Vita Vea, Golston, and then Ndamukong Suh as well. And so what I saw against the Chiefs last year for them is that the 49ers were able to hold the Chiefs, and they were only rushing four, too. I think that's going to really what it's going to come down to. The game's going to come down to the trenches. But when I was comparing this, you also saw that the 49ers as well, their offense compared to the Buccaneers' offense is nowhere near as good as the Buccaneers are this year. And so I think that's where the Buccaneers are going to have a chance with. But it's going to be really, really hard because the Bucs just aren't a good team on man-to-man, or they're not a good team on zone defense. But on man-to-man, they're very good, one of the best. But you cannot play man-to-man against the Buccaneers, and they didn't, or against the Chiefs, sorry, and they didn't do that in Week 12 as well. So it's going to be a tough game defensively for the Bucs.
Here's my thing about the comparison of this year's game to last year's game and the Bucs to the 49ers.
Right.
Is I think you have a totally different Chiefs offense.
Okay.
Like, yeah, you have the pieces there, but I think even though it seemed impossible for Travis Kelce to become more of a part of the offense, he really has. And so the offense is really – they have two top five wide receivers in the game right now, except one of them is a tight end.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes covering, Joe, like you said, you can't play man coverage against the Chiefs, and so covering these guys in zone is impossible.
Yeah.
And especially Tyreek Hill, he eats the zone up. And so I just don't see any way that the Bucs are going to be able to stop the Chiefs even on one possession. Yeah, maybe the Bucs offense, who is potent, they can score 35, but it's not going to match the Chiefs scoring 58 or whatever they do.
Right. It's almost like the Chiefs offense has gotten better than it was last year even. They've added more to it with Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Le'Veon Bell even at the running game. But, okay, so Joe.
And you got to look at the Bucs too, because since their loss against
the
Chiefs.
We haven't even talked about the Bucs yet.
No, yeah, I was just talking about kind of what Joey was saying, but since their loss to the Chiefs, they've been one of the best offensive and defensive teams. There's only been four teams in the NFL championship history that have had a top five offense and defense to go to the NFL championship. And the Bucs are one of those teams. Everybody's just forgetting about that. I just think the Bucs are going to actually have a great chance to win this game, though. But
and I'm not disagreeing with you that the Bucs have a very good offense. They do have a couple holes defensively, but that front four, like you were saying, is insane. But my big issue with it is that offense, I just don't think if the game is a shootout like I'm anticipating it's going to be, I just don't think they can keep up. I think that they have too many holes. Playoff Lenny has really come forward, but I just don't think Fournette can make this offense balanced enough, especially when you've got like Tyrann Mathieu lurking around the secondary for the Chiefs.
I think he's going to have a big game.
He's going to go crazy.
It almost feels like with some of the Bucs do have the depth on their offense, but it's almost like
they have scary.
It's not
depth.
Consistent though. Sometimes some of these guys can steal you a game, but you don't. Gronk's not the player he once was, where he can take over any game. It's hit or miss with some of these guys, and if the consistency is there for the Bucs, I think they could do it.
Keep going.
I was just gonna say so who are some non-quarterback players that could need to step up for either team? Because the Brady Mahomes matchup, that's golden. We know both of those guys need to play at their best. But who's one X factor you have for the Bucs or the Chiefs that you think needs to step up?
For the Bucs, like you were saying, the tight ends and how Gronk, he hasn't been great as he usually is, but the Chiefs' biggest weakness definitely on defense is covering the tight end. And with Gronk and Cam Brate from Naperville Central, hometown guy for me, they're going against the Chiefs. And Gronk just has history in the NFL championship and in the AFC championship a couple of years ago in overtime against the Chiefs. Gronk put the team on his back. I know he's not the same person, but this year was his first time ever in his NFL career. He's played over 19 games. He stayed healthy, and it's the big game, and Gronk shows up for that. He shows up for the big game every year. So I think it's going to be the tight ends for the Bucs that could have a great chance here.
And I think on the opposite side of the field, everyone is looking at the Chiefs offense, right? And they're thinking that these are going to be the guys who make it or break it. But I think if you look at the defensive side of Kansas City as well,
mm-hmm.
there are a lot of guys who have the potential to change this game. And I think the most important one of those guys is Frank Clark, the D-end for the Chiefs. Because I think if Frank Clark and the rest of that front four can really put the pressure on Tom Brady, I think that's been one of the weaknesses for Tampa Bay this year, has kind of been their pass pro and being able to keep Brady clean. And they really fixed it the second part of the season. But I just think that if Frank Clark can find a way to Tom Brady, it's going to be a completely different game than we've seen from the Bucs in the past five weeks.
Frank Clark was also the X factor I had, because I was going to compare it to the Khalil Mack game when the Bears played the Bucs, where Mack was just able to get whatever matchup he wanted and run wild against him. I think it could be similar to that.
I mean, is Frank Clark Is Frank Clark going to toss Tristan Wirfs
only
with one arm?
Mine would be Chris Jones. I feel like the defensive tackle, because he can get to the quarterback, and he's a terrific run defender. He can
both of those guys.
Yeah, he can do both of it. But then also for the Chiefs, their offensive line, they're without two of their starting tackles beginning of the year, and they're going to like I said, once we open this thing up, it's going to be one of the trenches. It always is. And it's just going to be really interesting to see the Chiefs' O-line go up against the Bucs' O-line or D-line and the other vice versa. It's a lot of storylines on the line this weekend.
And one of the storylines, I can't believe we made it this far in the segment without anybody bringing it up. The quarterback for the Bucs, this kid from Michigan, Tom Brady, playing in his 10th championship. How does he keep doing it? And has he finally met his match with this team? What do you guys think of Brady here?
I am so done talking about this fool. I need him to have a Brett Favre-esque unceremonious exit from the league.
You just need, like, who is it, Corey Wooten?
He's always been good for the league. He's never been, he's never said anything stupid. He's always been just a leader and a character for the NFL, and he's, no one's ever done anything that Tom Brady's done. Like,
I just think Tom Brady.
I used
Brady,
to not like him at all.
Tom Brady is the perfect. He's the perfect villain. He's the perfect villain because he played. Because he played. If you
no,
because
no.
If you think about his years with the Patriots,
okay,
and how good they were, they were the team that you could look at and be like, ugh.
Yeah.
At least
yeah.
I don't like the
I
Patriots.
I feel like Belichick's more of a villain though. Like,
right.
He just seems like
Brady,
a villain.
But Belichick is the guy I don't
see,
like.
See, I'm the other way around.
Okay.
Because I think that Belichick made Brady.
Oh.
Right.
Oh,
that's
really
why.
Low.
That's why the Patriots
know.
Are
I'm
7-9
okay.
And Tom Brady's in the Super Bowl.
Well, okay. Yeah, okay.
Quarterback.
Think about the Patriots had like 11 guys opt out of this season. Like, how are you gonna win with all second stringers?
Okay.
But I really do think that Bill Belichick and the way that he coaches football, and watch the Bill Belichick and Bill Parcells 30 for 30. That's what sold
that's
me on
one.
This. But I truly think that a lot of Tom Brady's success can be attributed to the fact that he had one of the best football coaches to ever be in the league. And so I hate when people are like, oh, he's the greatest of all time, no debate.
Okay.
And if you think about these other quarterbacks who didn't have these coaches but
right.
succeeded just as much, mm-hmm. like if you look at Drew Brees, who Sean Payton is no Bill Belichick, but Drew Brees still has
right.
some of those gaudy stats.
Or even Peyton Manning was able to do it with a lot of different
yeah.
head coaches.
Oh, yeah. So Peyton Manning is we don't have time to get
right,
into Manning versus Brady. But, yeah, I just think that Tom Brady serves very well as the villain
and,
of
yeah,
the NFL.
And I agree. And his three losses in the championship game have been to Eli Manning, and Nick Foles. So those are three
awesome.
Quarterbacks you don't really think about. I do think Brady is one of the best, but I feel like he's always getting bailed out by his defenses, and I think it's going to happen here again on this Sunday where he's going to get bailed out by their defense somehow,
right.
somehow, some way, and they're going to
Was that Joe
there.
Kennedy officially picking the Bucks?
Well,
yeah.
Let's do this here, guys.
I'm
going to ask for a score prediction and what color the Gatorade that gets dumped on the winning color is going to be.
All right.
The only two predictions that matter.
The only two that matter.
Let's hear them.
So Joe, you already put yours out there. Let's hear it.
Yeah, so I'm gonna go with the Bucks on this one. I really think everyone's just still sleeping on them. If you take a look at the matchups, it's very, very close comparing. The one thing I'm worried about is the safeties for the Bucks being possibly out. They've been limited in practice, but we'll see what happens there. But I'm gonna be taking the Bucks. We'll heard about 35, 31, something like that.
Gatorade color.
Ooh. I'm going to go red. I believe red has never been a Gatorade color in the suit in the big game.
Oh, JOK. For my pick, I've been talking up the Chiefs, so I've got to go with the Chiefs. I think it's going to be a blowout. I think it's going to be like 45-31.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Like, I really don't think it's going to be anything close. And as for the Gatorade, I think it's going to be like that, like, Arctic Rush purple, you know? No, yeah, it is gross. That's why they're wasting it, because
they already
drank the lemon, lime, and the fruit punch, the good flavor.
Right.
Lili?
I'm going to go. Joe, you've talked me into it. I'm also a Bucks
Leo,
guy. I'm
Leo,
a Bucks guy.
No.
Bucks are going to win 24-21.
Scotty Miller, Barrington.
Leo,
you got Illinois guys 24-21.
24-21, last-minute drive. Brady's going to do a two-minute drill.
Two of the best offenses in the league this year, 24-21.
Yes, I do.
All right, guys, if you believe Leo, smash the under for this game because there is not a chance that neither of these teams score over 30 points. Are you insane?
Little
oh,
you never
goodness.
Know. It's the big
oh,
game.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
It's always a little lower scoring than we think it's going to be. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, even last year.
Oh, but there's no way.
24.
That's what I think.
There's no way.
We'll see next week. As for the Gatorade color, the best. The yellow lemon lime Gatorade is going to be what's dumped.
Don't sleep on clear, like water. That's sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes
okay.
People forget about that one.
People forget.
People do be forgetting.
So you got yellow. I got red. Joey's got purple.
Yes,
okay.
sir.
All right.
We'll see how wrong we were on all of these predictions next week. But when we come back, we're going to have Andrew Avola on the show, and we're going to talk some NBA basketball. You're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the Pulse of Redbird Nation.
I'm Dan Muller, basketball coach of your Illinois State Redbirds, and you're listening to The Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND.
We're back. I'm Leo Stodher with the Joes, Kennedy and Dwyer, and now joining us is Ottawa's very own Andrew Avola. He's bringing some NBA hoops to talk about. Andrew, tell us a little bit about what you want to cover tonight.
You know, specifically, I'm a big Chicago Bulls fan.
Let's
so
go.
I want to talk about the Bulls, you know, what I've seen this season from them so far.
The young Bulls.
And
okay.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, I was going to say, let's get right into it then, because it has been the start of a new era for the Bulls, where they're under new management, have the new coach in Billy Donovan. What changes have you seen so far under the new regime than under the previous Garpax, Jim Boylan management?
Honestly, I think a big thing that, you know, a lot of people might not see as much is just, like, even though they're, you know, their record, they're still under 500, they're 8-12 right now. I think that just the play of the players on the team and the response of the players to the coaching. Because, you know, last year I feel like, you know, with Boylan,
oh, they
a lot
hated
of, they
him.
Hated
they weren't
him.
Interested.
Yeah, they
all,
hated
yeah.
him. And I hated him, too, to be honest.
Like everyone, like literally everyone in the NBA world, I think, just thought he was just never a good coach at all.
Exactly. And now that Billy Donovan in there, and Billy Donovan's, you know, great coach, got a, you know, good reputation in the league mm-hmm. and in college and into basketball in general. And the players have just, you know, really played up to their potential. You know, obviously we're still young, you know, rebuilding, developing players, but just a lot, they're more competitive this year. Last year, you would see them just give up, you know, get blown out, roll over. A lot of times this year, from what I've watched, the game, they could be down 16, 17 points and, you know, early, and it's just not over, and they're playing till the end.
Joe.
You're good. I saw today, I was watching The Jump on ESPN, and Zach LaVine joined, and they were just asking him about, like, the difference between this year's team and last year's team, and he was just saying that it's just a complete different mindset. It's just like a complete, like, 180 compared to last year. And you've seen it, like you were saying, Andrew, how they've been able to come back from these leads. But sometimes they get rid of their leads, but that's just all part of growing up as an NBA team.
And I think what's been encouraging is, I think there were some players that Boylan kind of broke. We remember Lauri Markkanen had that awesome rookie season, but then, like, was, like, the player we were used to. And then you throw in Wendell Carter and Kobe White, these guys that were struggling before. I think that is really encouraging because for Markkanen, White, and Carter, it looked like these might be trade chips or guys you're just going to lose after you've invested so much in. So I think Donovan has done a good job of reclaiming some of the value that was there in some of their youngest players.
Yeah, you know, it's just really good to see. Honestly, it's exciting as a Bulls fan because, you know, the Bulls have been bad for a while now, you know, since Derrick Rose got hurt. And it's just, like, fun basketball to watch. It's a different team, a different, like, feel to the season. Obviously, like, shortened season a little bit. But it's just, Bulls basketball is fun to watch again. Like, you know, every night, you know, I want to tune in and watch them because, you know, you got all these young pieces. Markkanen is playing great to start the year. He had a little trouble early. I think he had COVID issues early on in the season, missed a couple games, but he's averaging, like, I believe it's, like, just under 20 points a game.
Yeah, he's had a couple of games, like, back-to-back over 20 points, and you've seen that a lot. The one thing, though, I think that they, when they're winning games, I feel like it's usually that either one of the three, either LaVine, Kobe, or Markkanen has, like, over 20 points. But in the past couple of games, you've really seen the consistency between all three being able to play together, spread the ball around, and also they've been out without Wendell Carter, who's out for about another month. So that's another thing you got to look at, too, as well.
And I think that's one of the great things that Billy Donovan came in and did was he used the pieces that he had
right. In
a way different way, in a way better way, because last year the Bulls were running most of their offense through Otto Porter. Which
he's not good.
He is. Oh, my goodness. And I don't think Otto Porter's that bad. I just think he was
not worth the money.
He was horrendously misused.
Yeah.
I think that he can be a pretty good 3-and-D piece. I think that you can use him in that way, but you can't use him to run your entire offense, especially when you've got Kobe White, one of the players that I was most excited about coming out of college in his class, and the Bulls just completely misused Kobe White last year. So Billy Donovan coming in and really taking a look at his personnel and thinking, okay, this is what I have to do. These are the guys who I have to use in certain places. I think that's tremendously improved the Bulls.
Right.
And now they can actually focus on roster moves now that they have audited and they actually know who is a piece worthy of keeping.
And that brings us to a good crossroads here, is because one piece that we're not sure where he fits into the future is Zach LaVine. He's playing at an all-star level this year. There's still some debate about that, if he'll make it or not. But he still finds himself in this dance of, are they going to trade him? Does he want to be here? What do they do with him moving forward? Is he someone that they should keep for the long term, or somebody that they should get some picks or even a younger player for.
He looks so much more interested in playing for the Chicago Bulls this year mm-hmm. than he did under Jim Boylan last year. So I think the question of does he want to be here, I think
he
does a lot more than he did last
and,
year.
Yeah, in the interview today on The Jump, he said, I love being in Chicago. I would want to be here. But basketball, he said something about, like, just basketball is a business still at the end of the day.
Definitely.
But he said he loved the city, and he said he doesn't want to leave. Like, he doesn't, but he would if, obviously, and he likes having that much interest because he's on an all-star level. But, Andrew, do you think that the Bulls should keep LaVine, or they should maybe try to get some picks, some other assets, and maybe sell him here towards the deadline?
For me, I want to keep him. I thought he should have been an all-star last year. Everybody thought I was crazy. This guy can score. He can flat-out score. He may not be that superstar-caliber player that I think we desperately need,
mm-hmm.
but he's definitely a star. He is a star in the league. He's going to be an all-star this year. If he's not an all-star this year, there's problems, in my opinion, because this man can score on anybody. He's averaging, I think he's averaging 27 a game. I think it was either 27 or 26 a game, and that's like eighth or ninth in the league. And if you're scoring that much in this league, I know like it's a scoring league now, but on any some of the teams the Bulls have played to begin the year, they played the Lakers twice, they played
Clippers.
The Clippers, they played the Celtics. They played a lot of the high-caliber teams in the NBA, and he's performed on all these games. He had 38 at the Lakers. I remember watching that game. It was about a month ago. He had 38 on the road and a tough loss by two to the Lakers, and he's just playing at a high level.
Especially in the fourth quarter. Like, in the fourth quarter, he just... It's Zach LaVine time in the fourth quarter. The other night against the Knicks, he only had about 11 points... like heading into the end of the third and going into the fourth quarter, but he ends up with over 20, and they were able to come out with a victory in that one. He just likes to go off in the fourth.
And, Andrew, talking about your point about the teams that the Bulls have played so far this season, is you're right, they have played the Lakers, they played the Clippers, the Celtics, and they were able to go toe-to-toe with all these teams, maybe not pulling out the victory, but very reminiscent of the Illinois State Redbirds visiting the Drake Bulldogs, where this is a team that some view as overperforming against these good teams, but I don't think it's overperforming as much as performing up to their potential.
And one of the X factors for the Bulls achieving their potential has been Patrick Williams, who maybe is ahead of schedule where people thought he was going to be before the season. Andrew, what have your early returns been? Because I don't think I ever asked you for your opinion on the pick when it happened. What have you thought of the Bulls' potential next big thing?
I love him. I think he's a great player, in my opinion. When we drafted him, I know a lot of people were like, he was a sixth man off the bench in college. But
that doesn't mean anything.
But like, he's clearly, you know, I said this. I think I tweeted this out when everybody was freaking out about it. I was like, mm-hmm. this is a new regime. Arturas, Billy Donovan. You know, I'm ready. I'm optimistic. I said this at the time. I think if they think he's a good pick and a good fit for us, I'm not going to doubt it. Until they give me a reason to doubt that, like Garpax did and, you know, that whole regime before that, if they were to pick that pick, I'm sure everybody has a good reason to doubt it because nothing's been working out for them.
And he's averaging 10 points per game, too. And taking a look at Kawhi Leonard, who's been compared to mostly, definitely, to Kawhi. Kawhi's rookie year, he only averaged 8, and in the sophomore year, only averaged 12. So getting compared to Kawhi Leonard, especially at an early point of his career where he wasn't really looked at a lot coming out of college, and then all of a sudden Patrick Williams, just especially during draft week, he just came out of nowhere. And same thing with Kawhi Leonard. They're just very, very similar. Both have huge hands, too. And I think Patrick Williams is just going to be a beast for the Chicago Bulls.
I do want to give a quick shout-out to Jose Sandoval in our stats
Beat
department.
Beat me to it.
Just let me know that in that first Bulls Western Conference road trip, they lost all the games.
That's not the stat he sent
by
me.
A combined 11 points, and he sent Leo a starter a different stat?
Jose, the man of the stats, just let me know that Zach LaVine is fifth in all-star voting.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jose.
He's averaging career best in literally almost every category on offense.
It's 2021, but that doesn't mean you can't still get out and vote. Go vote for Zach LaVine. But getting back to the rookies, Andrew, when I look at the draft class and I was looking at who the Bulls might take it for, obviously the first two options were going to be Anthony Edwards and LaMelo Ball. But then they left Obi Toppin on the board, which I was really surprised about.
That was the right move.
Yeah. Really?
I think the potential. Yeah, same with that.
I think Obi Toppin has a higher potential than Patrick Williams.
I
don't know.
Whoa! If I'm
a big
out of pocket, let me know.
I love Obi Toppin,
but you look at the youth and how much skill William, I think there's so much upside there, potential that he could develop into. That what was Obi Toppin? How many years he'd be at Dayton, Joe? Was he a sophomore or junior?
He was going to be a redshirt sophomore, I believe. So he played 2 years.
Okay.
There, I think.
So he was a little bit older than Williams, and I just think we had a better idea of what he was. I just think what intrigues me so much about Williams is the unknown of how good he could potentially become.
He's 19.
Right, he's so young. Yeah. He's putting up 10 points per game
in the
NBA.
That's also a scary thing, you know, because, like, Leo, we know as Blackhawks fans,
right,
you get a guy out of juniors at 18, and maybe he doesn't develop at all.
Right.
And then you're stuck with this guy who plays the same way he did when he was 18 years old. And so that's why I'm a little apprehensive to take a guy like Patrick Williams or even a guy like LaMelo Ball, who are younger than your average draft pick, because there's just some reservations there.
And that's a fair critique. That's just how I feel about the NBA prospects, is that the youth intrigues me that much about Williams. I think he could really be something special here.
I just want to point out two things, actually. Patrick Williams, I think as of this past week, it might have been either Monday or Tuesday, he is the youngest player in the NBA right now, because the Thunder sent down, I can't remember his name, who was one of the rookies this year, and he was the youngest player from overseas, but they sent him to the G League, and now he's the youngest player in the league. But from what I've seen from Williams from the start, he's just like a very, you know, calm player on the floor. He, like, you don't see him make too many bad decisions as a rookie, and I feel like that's been really well noticed. I mean, I remember after the Lakers game, when LeBron was asked about him, he kind of gave credit saying that the Bulls have a good one in his eyes and Patrick Williams, because Williams guarded LeBron, and that's no easy assignment. Williams has been stepping up to take on the best players on each team each night because he's just so good defensively, and he's not shied away from the challenge, and I think that's just a promising sign for him going forward.
He literally is Kawhi Leonard. Like, you can't express it enough, just the way he plays defense, the way he just doesn't really talk in post-game or just even after games. You don't see him on social media. Quiet guy, and even players on the team say that he is too. And he's younger than all of us, I would believe. He's 19 years old. So you just got
to
think about that.
That hurts.
It just hurts.
Say,
we're
Joe.
Talking about a guy who's playing for the Chicago Bulls, one of the best franchises in NBA history. And this guy's 19 years old,
you know,
being compared to Kawhi. And,
you know, I could have been on the
Kawhi.
Bulls at 19 if it weren't for my bum knee.
Right. Oh,
you know?
Yeah, of course.
Those Iowa basketball players, man.
Hey, you know Luka Garza? You ever heard of him?
Luka Dwyer over here. But one thing's for sure, the future is bright for the Chicago Bulls. We're excited for what it could become. Andrew, we thank you for coming on. But when we come back next, we're going to take you to school in the 3-Up, 3-Down, our very own Pick'em segment.
Let's stick around
for that. You're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Going up, coming down.
It's the 3-Up, 3-Down.
3-Up, 3-Down.
Only on the pulse of Redbird Nation. 103.3 WZND.
That's right. It's time for the 3-Up, 3-Down, our Pick'em segment that we do this semester. Joey, could you give our listeners a refresher on how the 3-Up, 3-Down works?
All right, so here's how the 3-Up, 3-Down works, Leo. We're going to pick three favorites. We're going by the ESPN probabilities. We get to pick one who has over 80%, and then we pick three underdogs as well. No rules there. The only other rule is one of these games has to be a Missouri Valley Conference contest, and my MVC contest. I think I got a good one. I'm not gonna lie to you, but I'll save it. I'll save it till the end.
Don't
worry
about
end.
That.
Okay, cocky.
He is. But
I mean, that's like half of my personality on the show.
Of course. And
cocky.
So far, it's served you well, because let's look at the standings. There's a three-way tie for first place between our faculty advisor Steve Cease, Joey Dwyer, and Joe Kennedy, all at 4-2.
Come on, baby. Too easy.
I'm sitting at 3-2 though in fourth because I had a COVID game, so it got canceled. So that's
a fun wrinkle this season.
Right.
You not only have to pick the winners of the games,
you got to make sure the games get played.
You also have to pick, okay, which game is not going to get COVIDed out.
Right.
You know.
So
and
we're doing
I,
it by winning percentage, right?
Exactly.
At the end of the year, we'll do it by winning percentage instead of just head-to-head record.
And our guest last week, Blake Hornsing, didn't put you in too deep of a hole, Andrew. He sits at 3-3. So, last but not too bad. So, let's get into this. For my first game, I'm going to go with, let's see here. Got to pull the spreadsheet up. I'm starting the Big Ten, a game on Sunday, Iowa versus Indiana. I'm picking Iowa as the favorite, as a 69.7% favorite. That'll be my first up.
Nice. I love the Iowa pick. For my first favorite, I'm going Virginia Tech over Miami, favored at 72.7%.
All right, I'm doing my first favorite, too, as well. My up, I'll be taking Purdue against Northwestern. Purdue's got a 75% chance to win this one.
That's a great pick.
It is.
That's a great pick.
It really is. Easy one.
I'm going to go with, I have an interesting pick, maybe a team that's kind of flown under the radar, even though they're ranked 10th, I believe, Alabama over South Carolina on Tuesday. They're 73.4%.
Ooh, I do like Alabama this year. They're a fun team to watch.
And for Steve's first pick, he's going with an underdog first. He's got UC Davis at Cal State Northridge. UC Davis is 51.1% favorite. Steve's going for the underdog with Cal State Northridge. Wild. Prediction.
I don't know where he finds these games.
This man.
those aren't real
stories. For context, this is also the man who runs a bracket challenge, but instead of the NCAA bracket, we do every conference tournament bracket. And it's like, my email is flooded with spreadsheets every day from Steve C.
Yeah.
I'm so excited to get back to that this year.
That should be wild. As for my next game, I'm going to the Pac-12. We got Cal at Stanford on tonight at 8. I'm going with Stanford, they're the favorite at 74.8%.
All right, my next favorite, I'm going with Creighton over Marquette, former MVC team in Creighton. And I have a little grudge against Marquette because they just beat us in volleyball.
Right.
So Creighton's favorite, 71.1%.
But hey, glass half full. We beat them, too.
We beat them, too. There we go. JK, over to you.
Yeah, I'm going to stick in the Big East right here. So I'm going to be taking Butler over DePaul. Butler is a 60.5% favorite. So I think the Bulldogs are going to get right back into it, maybe get things going here.
Like the pick.
I got a big game this weekend, actually. I'm a big diehard Duke fan, so the Blue Devils are taking on the Tar Heels this weekend.
That's a big character flaw, Andrew.
I got Duke. Duke is favorited 54.3%. Yeah. Both teams struggling a little bit this year. Blue Devils had a bad loss to Miami earlier this week, and I think they're going to rebound this week and beat their rivals at home.
Yeah, the Blue Buds are doing tough this year for the COVID season.
It's been tough as a Duke fan for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And for Steve's next favorite, at least he's going back to the Power 5 here. He's going with the Vanderbilt-Georgia matchup. Georgia is the favorite at 65.6%, so he's going to go with Georgia.
This man is allergic to picking regular games.
No, please don't pick schools we've heard of here. As for my... Well, I'm... For my next game, I guess I'm going for the Steve strategy, but still a little bit more conventional.
Okay, okay.
I'm going for South Carolina Upstate against Radford. Radford comes in as an 86% favorite, so I got to go with Radford, right?
Is that okay?
I'm sorry. I contradicted myself there. Figures, make fun of Steve, then I go with that game.
Sorry, was that South Carolina Upstate? Did you say that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Not downstate.
So pretty much North Carolina.
Not
downstate.
When you get upstate.
Oh, thank God. Thank God. All right. So for my over 80, I'm going to go with the Joe Kennedy strategy.
Joe Ken strategy.
You always pick Gonzaga. So Gonzaga's going to beat
the West Coast Conference.
The Pacific. Joe, are they the Tigers?
Yeah.
Over there at Pacific
Tigers.
University? Yep. Yeah. 97.3%. Gonzaga's going to take this one no problem.
Yep, I'm going to have to go with that same exact game, too, as well. I wanted to do that one because it was a Thursday one. I just want to start off my week nice and 1-0 with Gonzaga, with 97% faves.
Joe, if the Zags lose this game, I'm going to be so mad.
First in, like, 2 years in the conference.
I am sticking with the Zags as well, but I have the game Monday night. They're traveling to BYU, and they're 80% favorites on the road, but I got the Zags.
Yeah, that one's tougher. I was looking at that one. I was like, I don't know, BYU, can't sleep on them.
I mean, Gonzaga is Gonzaga, honestly,
yeah.
In my opinion. They're number one ranked team in the country. They've clearly been the best team in college basketball, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Steve's next game, he's got Idaho against Eastern Washington. Eastern Washington comes in as a 95.6% favorite. So, of course, he's going with them there. That's his over 80 game.
I will give Steve C's $10 if you can tell me where Eastern Washington, Eastern or Western?
Eastern Washington.
I will give him $10 if you can tell me what town Eastern Washington University is in. No Google.
No Google, okay. As for my next game, I'm going to go with a dog here in the Big Ten. We got Minnesota against Rutgers. Rutgers comes in at 68.4%, but I really like Minnesota this year. I think they could pull off the upset.
For my first underdog, I was a little mean to the Pacific Tigers.
You were.
So
just a little bit.
So I'm going to pick them over San Diego. They got a 45.4% chance of winning that game. And I think they're going to wipe the floor with San Diego.
It's very nice of you, Joey.
So for my Valley game, it's going to be Northern Iowa against Indiana State. But Indiana State is the underdog in this one, but they've won five games in a row. So I don't really understand it, and I think Indiana State's going to pull out this one with Tyreek Key as the underdog.
For my first underdog game, I got a Big Ten matchup, pretty big Big Ten matchup. The Badgers traveling to Illinois. I got the Badgers over Illinois, 32.7%.
All right. I like the pick. I like the pick.
And Joe, great minds really do think alike here because Steve's going with the same Valley game as you, Indiana State over Northern Iowa. Indiana State, or Northern Iowa, is a 60.2% favorite.
Mm-hmm.
As for my next dog, I'm going back to the Pac-12 with the UCLA-USC matchup. USC comes in as a 63.6% favorite. I'm going with the Bruins of UCLA here.
I feel like I picked the wrong game to talk about last segment because Joe got such a nice compliment, but I also have Indiana State
as my
Missouri Valley underdog, 39.8%. They're going to beat UNI. I have no idea why they have such a low probability to win that game.
No, and you guys all ridiculed me for picking Indiana State last week against Bradley.
You know what? You're right. You're right, Leo.
Sorry, Leo.
I will go back a week in a week in the past and I retroactively take that back.
All right.
I got a real barn burner here as this underdog, as I'm going to be taking Auburn against Ole Miss. Ole Miss is the favorite at 50.2%, so I'm going to be taking Auburn on that one. They got one of the best players in the SEC, and close one there.
My Valley game of the week is actually going to be right here in Normal, Illinois. I'm going to take the Birds on Saturday over Missouri State at 33.1%.
They're going to win one of the two.
I was going to take the Birds, and then Leo told me I was a fool.
If they win,
I'll give you mad props.
I just
did
think
I really the word
they have a better chance to win Saturday instead of
Sunday. I think you did use the word fool.
Wow, that does sound like me, I guess. For Steve's next game, he's going with Temple against Wichita State. Wichita State is a 72.8% favorite, and he's going with the Shockers there as his favorite. And for my final game, I'm going with the Valley here, and I don't think anybody actually has used this game yet, so I'm going with the Indiana State-Northern Iowa game. Northern Iowa comes in as a 60.2% favorite, but I'm going with the Sycamores of Indiana State here. First one to say so.
All right, Leo.
All right, for my last underdog, we're going out to the Big Sky, Sky country. Montana State, right, number one in the Big Sky. They're 6-0 in conference. They have a 22.3% chance to beat Weber State, which I think is absolutely ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Montana State is undefeated at home. They're on a 7-game tear right now. No chance. Easy money for Montana State. It's a no-brainer.
You know it all. You were doing a lot of research on that one, but my last one is going to be Arkansas is going to be traveling to Kentucky, and Arkansas is the favorite in this one, so I'm going to have to go with Kentucky as about a 40% underdog on that.
And for my last pick, I'm going to go with Oklahoma State over Texas Saturday. Oklahoma State has been sneaky good. They can't qualify for the tournament because of some I think they had some issues, but Cade Cunningham, I mean, he's already being named as probably the top prospect coming out of college right now. And they've had a couple quality wins this year over Texas Tech and Kansas, so I think they played Texas close the first time, lost by three, I think, so I think they'll get him this second time around.
And Steve's going to wrap his picks up with the UNC Greensboro against Furman matchup. Furman is a 54.8% favorite, but he's going with the underdog of North Carolina Greensboro for his final dog. And that's going to do it for the 3 Up, 3 Down. We're going to see if these standings change. But it's been a great show tonight, guys. To Andrew, it's always a pleasure having you on. We thank you for taking the time talking about the Bulls. Made me feel a lot more confident about the team, so I appreciate that. We talked about some Redbird sports. We talked about the NFL championship that's happening this game. And we did our favorite segment, the 3 Up, 3 Down. It was a great show, guys. I can't wait to see what we do next week.
Yeah, it's going to be a good week next week. We're going to have a lot more ISU sports to talk about. Hopefully we'll have a guest from one of the ISU sports teams to come on. It'll be our first one of the semester, so really looking forward to hearing from a player or coach's perspective about what's going on. So next week's show is going to be An absolute barn burner. You got to tune in.
And it might seem like football is going away, but it's coming right back, actually. In just about a week or 2 weeks, the Redbirds will be back on the gridiron.
And that's right. So for Joe Kennedy, Joey Dwyer, Andrew Vola, I'm Leo Stauder. We thank you for listening to Red Zone. If you miss any part of tonight's show, you can find it on WZND.com. Thank you for listening. Have a great weekend, everybody.
To hear this and other past episodes of the Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And, of course, tune into the Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 1033 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.